I'm an alcoholic. My name is Brandon.
Hey, Brandon.
And it is a pleasure to introduce to you tonight's speaker. This gentleman was the first person that took me through the steps about 5 years ago, and then a strange mental blank spot happened, and he disappeared for 3 years. And if you're a seriously alcoholic, as Nathan is, we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. Nathan has come to the conclusion that he can go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of his tolerable situation the best he could, or the other was to accept spiritual help. And about 15 months ago, 14, 15 months ago, this man came back into my life, and since that day, he sought this the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proven to be the loving, powerful hand of God. A new life has been given to him. It's been so cool to really watch and experience this man over the last year plus, and just to watch what God has done in his life and the transformation that's happened so rapidly. And I think that if anybody looks at the five people that are closest to them in their life, and they really analyze those people, and they really look at who those people are, that those people, the five closest to you, can define the character of your life. They can define the character of your spirit. And I can tell you that as this man has came into my life 15 months ago or so, that my character and my spirit has been raised just by the presence of him in my life. And I know you're going to feel that tonight, because he has that kind of energy. He has that kind of power. He has that kind of passion for life and for this program, and for the thing that I think he calls his God. So with that, I give you Nathan.
It's great. He's got me tearing up already. This would be the fifth time I've cried today, too, by the way. I tear up not normally recently, right? Like, I really did at least, what, the first 90 days, 6 months? Stuff would hit me out of nowhere. And I've had that happen today for some reason. I started the day in meditation, and I was thinking about all of you. So it's kind of weird. And whenever I say weird up here tonight, probably that's kind of a code word for God. Moments of God. It's kind of something that I thought, you know, Brandon kind of started that way back when I came in. Not so way back, but it's an honor for me to be here tonight, because the last time I spoke here, everything was flipped around. This was over there. And I went out like right after that. I was full of when I was up here last time. And it feels a lot different. I was scared last time. Right? For some reason tonight, there might be a little bit of, you know, some energy, but I'm not really scared. It's interesting, today I've communicated with my sponsor, who used to be my sponsor, his sponsor, and in a way, in meditation this morning, his sponsor and his sponsor, they've passed already. And that was a big moment this morning. I just started weeping, because I realized that I was experiencing, the only thing I could call it is overpowering sense of love being present right there. And I was thinking about all of you. So we're going to see how this thing rolls tonight. All right. How many folks in here are first 90 days? I just want to kind of get a feel for who I'm talking to. Okay. First, then after that, I guess, first year. Yeah. And then how many people are over a year? Oh, wow. How many people are one-chip wonders? Bunch of punks. Bunch of punks. Right? Copper resentment immediately about that. Not really. No. Not really. Because what I understand is that every single thing that has happened, whether you be here, pick up one white chip, move on, or if you're like me, been in and out a number of times, everything has been exact in your life. You don't sit here by random chance. You don't sit here because of just some sort of a random assortment of events. You're here because the way I've grown to understand God, everything's very precise. You just don't understand a lot of times what's happening when you're in the middle of it. And a lot of times we're run by things like fear, and we get really disconnected, right? But there's no way to be separated from God. Let me go to this first part here that I've been thinking about for a while to share with you all. This happened to me back in June of last year. And I didn't realize it. I didn't have it on the itinerary to get sober. What he read introducing me, that was exactly what I was thinking. I'm not going to get sober. I'm going to just live this way the rest of my life. There are other substances in my story that if I don't at least mention them, it's part of why I went back out, right? But I was convinced that I was going to be drinking Steel Reserves and packing bowls of green stuff and any other stuff that could take me out of me feeling like utter crap and void the rest of my life. And I thought it was normal. Even though I'd been in here, even though I'd been to the C unit at Ridgeview, even though I'd been in and out all the times before. You know, you go to a psych ward like the C unit and come out somehow thinking, I'm okay. I'm okay. Something about this is normal, right? But this is what I've experienced this last year. Like a gaunt prospector belt drawn in over the last ounce of food. That was me on my knees back in June of 2015. Joy at our release from a lifetime of frustration knew no bounds. Father feels he has struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he has barely scratched a limitless load, which will pay dividends only if he mines it for the rest of his life and insists on giving away the entire product. Of course, that part at the end is talking about the 12th step. I never really had the urge to work all 12 steps before this year. I tried every other single way you could think of before that was going to be the option. And then when it happened, when I was on the ground back in June of last year, it wasn't me choosing to have this shift. I literally am on my ground, dogs in the house, empty house, dog feces all around, right? I don't care about anything. I've been barely getting in and out of bed for the last 2 weeks because I'm a teacher and I'm on summer break. And my plan was summer was going to be awesome, and it fell apart immediately, right? And I'm on my knees weeping, and for the first time of my life, a real honest prayer came out of me that I didn't plan on saying, right? I was hitting my head as hard as I could because of that just internal pain. And that felt good, right? And I would drink to wake up, or I would drink to fall asleep, pass out, wake up, smoke something, go to sleep. Did this for 2 weeks. I'm on the ground sobbing, and I just start saying, make it stop. Make it stop. I hate myself. I've always hated myself. You supposedly are real. I teach at a Christian school, by the way. You supposedly are real. If you're real, I mean literally real. I don't mean Sunday school candy ass real, right? If you're real, show me how to love myself, because I can't do this anymore. And it wasn't, I can't drink or smoke anymore. I can't do this anymore, right? That brokenness that was always there from the time I was little, right? And it wasn't like this huge beam of light comes down and it's time to get sober. But there was a shift of peace, and the very first few thoughts were, you're going to have to go back to AA. you're going to have to. And I was okay with that. It was kind of like Bill's story where he has that shift, right? He has the shift before he stops drinking. He has it when he's talking about... No words can tell the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. I was a slave to it. Right? Keep in mind, too, when you realize that all the dots in your life have actually connected for you to be here, if this man was successful in his business venture, we're not here. If this man decides to kill himself that third time in his story that he talks about suicide, right? The market crashes. All his people he probably knows have committed suicide. He's like, whatever, I'm going to drink, right? That's stupid, right? Then he gets liquid courage that night by going in. Then later, he kind of, you see him progress to this point of like, I don't know, maybe I need to drag the mattress outside so in case I do jump, maybe in a blackout, right? I've had that experience. I've had that experience of, man, I can't imagine somebody trying to kill themselves. To, I very much want to, and that's why the C unit seemed like a pretty good idea, right? And then here, you know, the very end, when he probably really could have done it, he doesn't. And somehow Ebby just happens to walk in the door, right? None of that's coincidence. None of it. I love how he goes to Armistice Day and all that. And soon he's going to be catapulted. That was his last debauch. Soon he was to be catapulted in what he likes to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. I agree. I was born back in the 70s. My dad was a Army Airborne Ranger instructor. I was born out in Oklahoma on Fort Sill. I didn't go in the military because my dad was an Army Airborne Ranger instructor. It was not something I was going to do. I grew up going to a bunch of different schools before seventh grade, and then I landed here in Dunwoody and went to a school called Marist around the corner. I was always a straight-A student because I'd get in trouble if I wasn't, right? Played basketball from the time I was a little bitty, right? Go to Marist. I was very successful there. I was a retreat leader. Ended up being president of the National Honor Society, president of my class, captain of the basketball team, state champion on a number six nationally ranked team. I am proud about that. I'll go ahead and say it, right? But all these different accolades, and I promise you, I always, none of that made me feel good, proud. It was what it was expected. You should do that. You should always excel and achieve. That's why probably one of my character defects is I want to win AA, right? I want the gold star. I want to be the best AA-er there is. Like, there's something probably within me right now that just wants you guys to walk out here going, I'm never going to hear another story better than this one tonight, right? But I don't really feel that right now. That may flash later. But that's in me. That's the truth. It's always been in me. It's impossible to attain that, right? And over this year, I've gotten comfortable with failing. It's not like I'm trying to go out and fail, right? Go through high school. I even got like one of the awards they give you at graduation, like the best senior, right? None of that filled any void. Go off to college, things got interesting, right? I'm the guy who gets his girlfriend pregnant in college, becomes dad at 20, go from the fraternity house, where it is pretty clear if I look back on my story, oh man, I was in trouble back then, but I had no clue because everybody else in college, that's what you do. You drink that hard. You do drugs when you can, right? But I was the guy that put on the cape and did the right thing. Right, married the girlfriend, didn't want to, right? But I please other people. I want to make sure you're all right with me, so I'm going to make sure that even though my heart of hearts and my gut instinct is saying don't do this, That intuition is good to listen to. For me, it's the spirit. The great reality deep down within talks all the time to you. It's a matter of, are you listening? Do you develop the ears to hear, as another book says? Right? But I would ignore that. I would explain to myself why I needed to sacrifice what I knew to be my truth to make sure other people were good. And I found out through doing inventory and working with Brandon that that's when some of the worst damage can happen to other people. It's when we do that. That's good to find that out, that it's okay to do what I deep down really want to do. Say what I really want to say, you know. College was rough, you know. Had to tell my wife at the age of 21 that her dad died out of nowhere. And that was like 6 months after we have a baby girl. And I'm trying to do the law, LSAT and all this other stuff. And I'm getting the best grades still. And I mean, why wouldn't I drink to numb everything out and to have that peace? We drink because we like the way it feels, right? I always thought that's why everybody drank. I really did. I mean, I'm not saying that'd be funny. I thought that was the reason you drank. I always thought that from the time I cracked my first Zima at prom. Right? It was on. I was monitoring my buzz constantly that very first time. The fact that my girlfriend shows up with like Gorbachev size hickeys all over the next day and I don't remember any of that stuff, right? It was apparent really early on. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It was normal for me the whole time. They are uneasy, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire, again, as so many to do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree. It's too hot. I got to take this off. Emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink. Thank you. Not to drink again. Just repeat it over and over again, right? So I'll ask you this question. You don't have to answer it. I guess it's rhetorical. Do you believe that you have to have that exact same experience with the steps? Has that ever occurred to you? You must have that or you're going to go back out. That's my experience. It's my experience. I've got to have another way to that peace, ease, and comfort because I'm too much of a wuss. I can't, as time has gone on, I can't tolerate within me anxiety. I can't tolerate being dishonest. I can. I'll stay in the pain of it, but it's going to come out, right? I can't not be true to myself for an extended amount of time. I'm going to be forced to get out of it, right? And I don't have the weed. I don't have the alcohol. I don't have anything else. I can't. I have no other options. That was clear to me back in June of 2015. There's no other way. But what's really good about that, knowing that gut level, you're done, and I can't say something that's going to make you feel that. If you're doubting tonight, if there's something in you that is sitting there going, I'm not wanting to tell this one. That's what I was doing the last time I was standing at this podium. Right? It needs to come out. It needs to be told to your sponsor. It needs to be told to somebody you trust. Or you can keep it to yourself. Probably go back out. And that's okay too. I don't know that you make it back. It's okay because enough pain will be provided for you to come back. In my experience. That's what it's been like. There's a part of the doctor's opinion that talks about, I think it was the doctor's opinion, it's somewhere in the book, it talks about that delusion being smashed, right? Intellectually, I had that every time I was in before I stayed in, right? Intellectually, I could see. You could do a flow chart and go, this guy's got it. I knew it intellectually. What I was not going to tell anyone was, yeah, but I'm going to smoke weed because it's not addictive. It doesn't, I want to compartmentalize that. It doesn't have anything to do with my drinking. I really thought that, right? Just like even today, I'll think about sex has nothing to do with my drinking. I can compartmentalize that here. But see, I'll use multiple things in my life to fill that void other than God. And a lot of pain will come because of that, and then I'll wake up and come back to God. You know, it's like the rubber band, back and forth. And I'm getting more comfortable with that. The fact that there's that process. I don't get comfortable with pain, right? But I get comfortable with the fact of things seem good, something's going to come that's going to draw me back in closer. And that something is usually pain. I mean, I'm coming over tonight, I tear up making dinner, sweeping a broom because Beatles in My Life comes on. And all of a sudden, I'm thinking I'll start crying right now because I was thinking of certain people that had to do with some amends that I've made recently that are not here anymore. Right? But that's a God. That's a God shot. Constantly talking. You just got to listen. So then I'm driving over 285. There's this huge, beautiful cloud, beautiful sunset, and then Black Crowes Soul Singing comes on in my ear. I don't think that's coincidence. It might be. That's a pretty big coincidence. Right? This time I got left. How are you? So I'm somebody that has three ex-wives by 38. I have two daughters by two different ladies. A daughter that's 9 years old, about to be 10, her name's Sarah. And I have my big little one who's about to start her senior year in high school. I get to see her maybe about once or twice a year because of the decisions I made back in the day. Right? It's nice that I get to see her. I've made an amends with her. I made an amends with Sarah. I'll tell you about those in a second once I get up to step 9. At Ridgeview, C unit, you know, and I meet some lady and I fall in love with her. It's a great idea on the C unit to do that, right? Yeah, that's right. You know, when you actively have the counselor saying you can't do it, that's something that'll get you kicked out. But I'm real good at showing the poker face. I mean that. I'm not saying that to be, I'm really good at making you think something else is happening. That's not good. It's hard for me. There are times with Brandon recently where I don't want to tell him something because it'll make me look bad and I won't get the gold star and win AA. That'll kill me. It is funny, and I laugh about it afterward too. But when I'm wallowing in just crap, what am I doing? Right? I'll talk about that lady in a little while. She took her life after we were together there at Ridgeview. And I had an experience recently that was amazing. That has to do with her and her passing. My 20s were pretty wretched, pretty horrible. I was a really good, successful pharmaceutical salesman, big company, doing my thing like I always did, right? On the outside, things looked like this kid is on the ball. And this kid was drunk on the teleconference about every single Friday and probably high too. Didn't really even last 2 years of that job. I think I barely went to work from 10 to 2 at all every day. And every day I was drunk or high. That was normal, right? Getting in my 30s, things were tough. Let's get to the good part. Okay, so first step for me, I had to experience it. I couldn't intellectualize it. The circumstances had to be just so for me to get it, to wake up. And once I got that there wasn't any other option, that I was cornered, I automatically had the willingness. I automatically had the open-mindedness. And I automatically had the willingness to be honest, right? Those are vital, according to the book. And by the way, I'm a book thumper like he is, like everybody that I really hang out with. And I used to think those people were pains in the ass. And sometimes they still are. And sometimes they really think they know the book awesome. You know, and their are egos. I won't say they're our egos get really good about, oh, I was going to say this from, you know, this part of the book and all that. But what has happened, the reason it's so important to us, is that we have experienced a spiritual transformation based on just simply the recipe. Follow it. Do it. It's that simple. I never wanted to do it before. Why would I? I wasn't really gut level honest, ready to be done. And I don't even think I had the power to be ready to be done. I was powerless over that. Right? God stepped in. Separated me from it. I come in. I went out on him when he was in his fifth. No, we did the fifth step, I guess. It was after that. And so, okay, let me rewind a little bit. So I butt dialed him at some point in February before summer. Coincidence, right? One coincidence. I think it's another Brandon. Somebody I'm trying to talk with about a CPAP. And I'm talking, hey, and he goes, I don't think I'm who you think I am. And I went, because I'm drunk and high right then, right? I'm like, hey, how you doing? Okay, good. Get off the phone. Uncomfortable, right? And it wasn't like, and it was. I knew then, just by that real brief conversation, I'm not good, but there's no likelihood I'm coming back in. There's no way, right? I'm maintaining. By the way, in my job the last 7 years, I've only gone up. It's not like alcoholism looks like you got to be out on the street with a can warming your hands, right? I have been homeless before, earlier, but for some reason I could stick with the work and everything was flowing pretty nicely that way. Later on, my roommate from Ridgeview, who had lived with me back in the day, he came over about May, right before I'm about to get sober, right? He comes over and he's talking about wanting to go back in. This is the guy that taught me how to snort some stuff and smoke a different kind of glass pipe and do that. And I'm thinking, why do you want to get sober, man? You know, and he's low bottom. It's terrible. He's like, I think I need to go back in. I'm like, good for you. Do that. Right? It's like circumstances were just coming down the line. And then he texts me a message about a week before I came in saying, thank you. I'm about to celebrate 4 years. 4 years at that time. And I said something to the effect of, I think I'll be seeing you soon. So Monday I come in. Do not go back to my home groups, which are other fellowships, different fellowship. I go to one on Monday night, one on Thursday night down in Buckhead. I was not about to go pick my white chip back up there at all. I was so ashamed because I'd been very close with people before. So I went over to Napa where I knew no one, right? Walk in, get that, it's done. Had a doctor's appointment that day as well. And it's the first time that I'm being honest with a doctor about everything that I really do. I've been to multiple psychiatrists, all that stuff, never would tell them the real truth. I had a guy I'm sponsoring right now. He's like, you know, I'd tell him I drink like 4 or 5 beers a day when I'm really drinking like 8, 9, something like that. Me, I was like, good for you, man. I was way over 12 every day. Like me, lightweight, right? But it was very interesting because I call him on a Tuesday, tell him I'm in, and I'm like, you need to be my sponsor. Because I knew if he had stayed in all this time, and he also had a really good first sponsor from what I remembered, right? I knew his foundation had to be solid. There was a connection. There's always been a connection with Brandon, right? And it was Taco Tuesday at his house, and he starts crying into the tacos. And I think that's pretty cool. But it's been on. God set it up to where it was during the summertime. So I'm off from school, and every day for, I guess, the first week or two, I'm coming over to his office, and we're spending hours and hours and hours going through this. And instead of taking me front cover to back, he starts doing it like the Russell Crowe Beautiful Mind type thing. He's flipping here, now go here, go here. And we're going all over the place, starting back in the family afterwards. and doing all this, because he was just kind of letting me marinate in the first step. He knew that I had to have it very clear that there's no more doing this anymore. There's no other options. Here's where all of your decisions have taken you. Here's all the wreckage that it's caused, all that type of thing, right? Get to the second step. That was no problem. I will say this about the second step, though. I was raised Southern Baptist, right? So I said the prayer at 9. Prayer like you got to invite Jesus into your heart and all that stuff, right? I said it. I mean, it's like a little alcoholic in the making. Like, it was one of these at Vacation Bible School where everyone had their heads bowed like this, right? And the preacher's like, if you said the prayer, go ahead and stand up, you know? And I'm going, did other people say it? Because there's no way I'm going to do this by myself. I'm not, you know, I got to look good, right? And so I, you know, do all that. And I can say, like, leading retreats and all this other stuff, I've had different spiritual experiences, but I don't think I really thought that they were literal and real. And that was no problem with the second step. The third step, the way I've been taught to do it, you go right there before you actually say the prayer. And you have all those different descriptions of agent, the keystone, all of these different things. We define those words because we're going to write sort of our own version. It's got to be a God of my conception. Now, my Judeo-Christian Jesus Christ God is still a part of who I am. It has expanded. When I talk about the Spirit, if I talk to a Christian, I'll talk about the Holy Spirit. If I'm talking to a Buddhist, I feel like I'm talking about the same thing, right? It's the same power. If you have a problem with God, I completely understand it. I empathize with you. As somebody who would be considered a believer, I didn't really believe a lot of my life, right? So the things that have happened that I need to get into now, you can't explain them other than God. The third step experience, I go to his house, I write the thing, I say the prayer. I'm driving out of his neighborhood, and I don't know if anybody knows a big Pink Floyd fans at all, but immediately on the turning away comes in through the earbuds, which is like basically about the third step, right? And I'm going, and I'm crying, losing it all. I lag on the fourth step like a lot of people do. He gave me a hard time about it and kind of, I don't know if he knew he was doing this, but he used my whole like achiever thing kind of against me, you know? It's like, hurry up and do it. The fourth step, we spent a lot, like a full day going through my resentments. The biggest thing I remember about it was the very last one that I did and I read to him was my second wife's father-in-law, who is one of us, was one of us. He's passed. Oh, he was mean. Mean. Southern Alabama, just mean, right? And I started weeping because I realized I'm him. I'm him. Not just because I drink, but the things that he would do, I would do, right? Maybe not to the extent. The same anger, same rage coming out, that always been in there, right? The fifth step was really good because it was something, it's kind of like working out. Most of the fundamentals of what we do, we don't really want to do them, but once we do them, we feel much better, right? So the fifth step definitely drives you into doing the sixth and seventh. You're ready to get rid of that stuff, but the best experience I've had, y'all, is in the ninth step. Sarah, I did one with her at like a Holiday Inn Express pool. We're swimming, and I do the amends with her there. And her, you know, we do it in a certain way. We talk about what we've done wrong. I didn't really go into details with a 9-year-old with all the terrible things I'd done, of course, right? But tell her about those things. Ask her how it makes her feel, all that. She said, it makes me feel good that you're not drinking anymore. Well, what can I do to make it right? It's sort of the last question. And she looks me in the eye and goes, don't ever drink again. And I'm going, I don't want to set false hope, right? But it's like, does the rubber meet the road? This is your daughter. You know? And I said, I'll do my best. So anytime, I know this, anytime afterwards that, like, man, a beer would be great on a little Sarah comes right to mind. Automatic. Now, beer would be great is not I'm jonesing for a beer, right? If you have thoughts, that's part of the disease, right? That doesn't mean that you're going, it doesn't mean that you have a mental obsession all of a sudden. And you can be free and have little thoughts like, cold beer on a hot day like today would be all right. For most other people, not me. Right? I did my men's with my daughter, Bella. That was really probably one of the scariest ones. When I found out that her mom was pregnant, that was the first time that I vividly remember reaching over to my fraternity house, grabbing a handle of Jim Beam, and wanting to change the way. I knew what feeling I was going to get as soon as I started chugging it. Right? From the time she wasn't even born, she was conceived until I make this amends. There had always been a shitty element of our relationship that was all for me, right? It was an anxiety. It was a struggle. I love her more than my own life, but there was this block, right? And the one thing that I was most concerned about was that she would think that I was a terrible father and that she didn't want to be around me anymore or didn't love me anymore or anything like that. And this wasn't like an awesome feeling at the end of this amends. Her mother remarries this guy who, in my decision making and not paying child support, I signed her away, right? This guy adopts her. I had the most resentment toward this guy forever, right? And so she looks me in the eye and I said, what can I do to make this right? And she goes, Kyle's been dad. I don't need you to be dad. Which, y'all, that's like, that's what I've been fearing. There it is, right? It's like a dagger in my heart. She said, I need you to be my friend and I want you to be in my life. And I want you to just be there for me when I need you. And then I watched her, with me not reacting, right? With me not getting upset, I saw her relax. And her whole spirit just lifted up. And she's being like she was when she was a little girl toward me. And I'm thinking by the end of the time I was with her, this is what I wanted. This is it. I don't care what she calls me. But it's like I stared my demon in the eye, the one that had really been there. There have been many. But that one, right? And I'm free of it. When I think about her now, there's not really hardly any anxiety other than I hope she's doing all right. I hadn't heard from her in a while, you know, that type of thing. I had an amends with my grandfather at his grave. My grandfather is a state trooper. He actually was the head of the state Trooper Academy down in Forsyth, Georgia. He worked for a bunch of different governors in Georgia. He was Lester Maddox, if y'all know who Lester Maddox was. He was the executor of Lester Maddox's will. So I've always been proud of my grandfather in many ways in terms of he's been my hero. He's kind of like John Wayne, right? Supposedly, he was pure hell in terms of his temper. And the first time he held me as a baby, right, he stopped. His mother had died. The first time he saw me was when my great-grandmother had died, and my dad and mom were bringing me back for the funeral. And B is his name. Supposedly, all I knew him to be was a saint, right? So B's a state trooper. I'm walking around the mausoleum. I was calling to make an approach about another amends to another father-in-law I had. it is funny when you think about it, yeah. Wait, one side note. When this last wife that I was with, and I'm calling him in tears, right? Because she's just told me it's not happening, right? We're going to get the divorce. And I tried, man, I did. I'm walking down the road in Midtown around Virginia Highlands, and I'm crying and everything, and he goes, do you want me to give you a little levity for the situation? And I don't think I really realized what the word meant at the time. And I was like, I just don't want you to kick me in the balls, dude. And he said, He says, Mark, who's up the tree in our lineage, he had what, four, five. Five. And I started laughing into tears, you know. Back to the amends with my grandfather. I sit down on a bench in front of his tomb. I'm going to meditation. And the way I've done some amends with people who have passed is I'll go into meditation and I'll get very clear and very still and I'll invite them there. It may sound weird and spooky or weird, I don't know. So I ask them, I tell them why I'm making amends. The fact that the last night that I get to spend with him when he's in hospice, I'm out by the dumpster getting high, right? And I'm sleeping next to him, and I'm the person that's been tapped as the responsible one to be there with him that night, right? So I tell him all of that internally. When I'm saying tell him, I'm not even talking audibly. And he, basically what came up was, take care of your grandmother. You're the oldest grandson. You need to be sort of the leader of the family for the next generation. And don't drink again. Don't. You're doing the right thing. You're on the right path. And I'm crying. And I say a prayer in the middle of it. Again, it's internally. And I said, I need to know this is real and not my imagination. As soon as the end and imagination had been thought, police sirens started right then. And I just... I lost it. And it was awesome. And as soon as I said, okay, I got it. As soon as the T had been said, stopped. Siren stopped. God's real. God's not a theory. This space that separates us right now that you think you see, it's not really even there. And I'm not saying this in some kooky way. You can look at quantum physics and you can know that that's true. I read an article yesterday that talks about science is looking at the electromagnetic force of your heart. They're studying this. So it's not this new age hippie stuff from Sedona that's talking about, you know, your aura and all this stuff, which I always heard that and I'm like, whatever. But what they are proving and seeing is that the power of this electromagnetic field is 60 times stronger than your brain. You know what the oldest addiction is? It's your thoughts. It's your thinking. The more I think, the less I be in the moment, the worse off I'm going to have externally. The experience is not going to be good. And that's why I meditate most every day. Had amends the other day that I made with Christina is the lady's name who took her life. And I sat down with her husband. Yeah, we were having an affair. I tried to find his number on Google. Couldn't find that. Found his address instead. Mailed him a letter thinking, there's no way. In my head, this guy just always wanted to beat my ass, right? In my head, if he ever saw me, I would have to defend myself or something like that. Part of me actually just wanted to beat the crap out of me because I'd feel better, right? He calls me. And he tells me pretty much right off the bat, I don't even hold any resentment towards you, but I think it would be good for us to get together. So we get together of Howell Mill Road at Moe's. Sit at the bar. We sit down. The first thing I said to him was, I am so shocked that you talked to me, right? And I said, I just thought you would want to just beat me up. He's like, oh, I did for 2 years. He's like, he said, but everything was so screwed up back then. He's like, I'm sure you probably wanted to do the same thing. And I said, no, I never actually had that feeling towards you. And then he told me, I asked him, how have you gotten through this? How have you gotten better? And he's not one of us. And he said, you know, after that happened, I sat many times at my desk with my gun thinking about ending it. And so I start thinking, oh, shit. I would have had something to do with that. I might not have been the huge cause of it, but I would have. Holy crap. And I said, I'm so glad you didn't. I'm so glad you didn't do that. Right? He said to me, and I did not say anything to him with this. I'm going to try to keep it together. He said, did you see the autopsy? Did you know what had happened? Christina was one of us, like no one I've been around. She would drink to blackout with vodka. She'd be blacked out before she got home, riding in the car, taking the vodka down, right? She had tried this, according to Brandt, she had tried this multiple times before, and he thought that she had done it in a blackout. In fact, he knew from the autopsy that she didn't mean to take her life because she had wrapped her wrists after cutting, right? He said it was like she was waiting for somebody to come and rescue her. It was me, right? I talked to her on the phone that afternoon. It was when the gas shortages were going on back in 08, and I was up off Old Milton, and I said to her, I'm going to get down there, and I couldn't get gas. I could have gotten down there. The truth is, y'all, I wanted to go get high and drunk on my own that night, right? Our past, that's why it's so important to clean up the wreckage. But I know it would have done no good to tell him that. I know that there's no way that I could have stopped her from eventually doing that. I know that everything happened just so that I could be sitting with him there. And later I found more information out about something that he could not connect that had to do with her childhood and her grandfather. And so I was able to provide him information for about something he has always wondered about. And you know what he texts me after the whole thing's over? You're a really good dude. And I'm like, man, no you, right? The amends have been eerie. I've shown up in ex-girlfriends' lives who were, this one lady was devastated because she had just been dumped by her long-term boyfriend that she had started dating after I'd been with her, right? And I'm making the amends to her, and she's like, this is something that I feel like he should say to me too. She's like, this explains everything of what I've just gone through and what I went through with you. That, to me, the ninth step promises. I always thought, y'all, that the promises were before I was halfway through just kind of being alive and I was hanging out in AA. When I would hear that, I really thought, just by being around the meetings, I'll say this, I went to 180 meetings in 30 days one time. Did not work. I got a friend in the room tonight, went to 352 and 90. Didn't work for him either. The meetings are awesome because I get to see the disease and empathize. And I can know that some of this crazy crap that goes on up here, okay, you got it too good. And then I can also get into a network of people who know me and I can be accountable to. Plus, the thing that I've experienced this last year or so is that I have legitimate friendships of people that I care about. It's like learning to be a real friend, which sounds kind of like kindergarten, but shit, I've never been that. Right? I never have. I'm interested about what's going on in other people's lives. That's not me. I'm clearly not disciplined, right? With many other things in life. But the one thing that I experience almost on a complete daily basis is the ability to get back to being present very quickly. And that's where the 10th and the 11th step are so awesome. It's like what the whole damn thing's about, y'all. It is. But if you don't do the other steps, there's no point in getting there. Although I would highly recommend, even if you haven't gotten to the 11th step, to meditate and pray every morning. I just would. It's made a ton of difference. Meditate however you want. Silent, guided, 3 minutes starting off. Your thoughts are pinging just like they probably will, don't worry about it. Do it. It grows over time. You want to do it over time. The ability to watch, ask, and turn, that's cultivated. That's not just automatic for folks. That's a hard thing. I never really could wrap my head around it until recently. And even that, it's like, ooh, I'm just now getting like a new toy to play with, almost, you know, because God delivers things quick. But I think he's always been delivering things. It's just more, I'm more attuned to getting it, right? Lastly, talk about the 12 step. I'm going to be real honest about it. I did not like being a sponsor before. And there are times where now, back then, it would just be like, oh, God, I got to go do this stuff. But what I've really found recently with some guys I'm working with right now is that I read through this over and over again, and I start going, oh, that's me. And then when I'm talking to these guys, I'm going, yep, 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 that one, too, yep, that one, yes. I know what you're talking about. I know what you feel. I did drink like that. I thought like that. I felt like that. All those things, right? Sure, it may be Laura Tab and whiskey, and mine was still reserve and weed. But we're talking about the same spiritual malady, right? I'll end with this, and it's a story about somebody who I don't even know if he's alcoholic or not. He's kind of a famous guy. It's the story of Squanto. And I want to say this story because I want you to see again how real God is, how there's no coincidence. Squanto lived up in the Northeast, right? Squanto's the Indian that came out when the pilgrims were all about to die, and he literally is like, hi, right? And they're going, holy crap, God's an Indian that speaks English, because he did. You know how he spoke English? Because when he was young, a slave trapper, it was already settled up in the Northeast. There had already been land that had been cleared by Squanto and his people, village. That's another kind of cool thing. When the pilgrims land, the land was already cleared. This guy kidnaps Squanto, takes him to Africa. It's a true story. I'm not making it up. Takes him to Africa, where he's worked as a slave. Then he's sold to some priest up in Spain, where he learns about the Western religion, starts to learn Spanish, I'm assuming. Then he goes to England. He goes to London. Finally gets on a ship and gets taken back, not far from where he'd been kidnapped from. He knows English. The pilgrims, they come over from a place called Scrooby, England. They had to ditch a boat because it was leaking. They're on their way over. One of the guys who is like the Navy, you know, the sailor, he's ripping them and making fun of them, right? Making fun of them for being these like religious freaks. The guy fell overboard and drowned. And they were all like, see what you get, right? But as they're dying in that first winter, Squanto comes walking out. They land right where he lives. He's a hermit at that point because all of his people have been wiped out by disease. You could win the lottery better than that could happen. And if that can happen, and that leads to our country being formed, I'm a history guy, the things that happen to you in your daily life mean a lot. And I hope that anything that I've talked about tonight just lets you realize that this is the best thing that you could find. And I don't mean just not drinking and not doing drugs. I mean the spirit that can grow within you, that is already within you, that will solve every problem you have. And that's been my experience. I appreciate you guys letting me share with you.